Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about fall tillage considerations, but as always, we are happy to talk about anything that's happening on your farm. If you want to give us a call here, the number is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us radio@agphd.com or send me a note on Twitter, agphdmedia, or Brian Hefty. So my brother Darren today is out looking at corn plots for sure. I'm not sure about soybeans, but he spends a lot of time actually with seed breeders, just trying to learn more about genetics as a whole and seeing what's coming, seeing what we can do, not only for our own farm, but just for recommendations around the United States and Canada. We work with a lot of farmers all over the place and do a lot of consulting. I guess one of the questions, though, we get every year is, okay, well, what should I be doing with fall tillage? And we talk so much about how each year is different. And now, granted, if you are a never-till person, or let's say you are a huge believer in I want to do full tillage, you're probably going to try to do the same thing every year regardless. But for a lot of us, we vary it depending on what things look like in the fall. For example, this fall, we've had no rain for over 2.5 months now. So things are getting really dry around here. And our guys were asking me the other day, all right, well, what are we going to do with strip till stuff or tillage or anything else? Because I don't know if stuff's going to go in the ground very well, Brian. It's so dry. And I said, you know what, guys? We got probably 3 weeks left of harvest. So how about we finish that up and then we'll worry about the whole tillage thing. Now, we know either way we're going to be doing soil testing. We know that we're going to be spreading fertilizer. We know we've got to put some tile in this fall. And by the way, in a dry fall like this one, and I mean, like I said, we haven't had rain in 2.5 months. So things are really dry right now, which is perfect if you have some low ground dirt work you got to get done. You've got a waterway that needs to be reshaped. You've got tile to put in. Some of these areas that, well, for the last 2 years, we've had record rainfall. I mean, in both 2018 and 2019, we had double normal rainfall. Think about that. Double normal rainfall. So it was hard to get a lot of these jobs done. Well, now all of a sudden things have really dried out. So you can go almost anywhere in almost any field. Nobody's getting stuck this year or anything like that. So it is nice to get some of those jobs done. But when we talk about fall tillage, the number one thing that I'm usually thinking about is my fertilizer. Okay, where am I going to put my fertilizer? How is it going to get into the ground if it's non-leachable? So for example, phosphorus, zinc, copper, and really, quite frankly, around here with as little rainfall as we get and as heavy as our soil is, potassium would fall in that category as well. Those nutrients basically are not moving. If you lay them on the soil surface, and a lot of people around here broadcast their fertilizer, well, if you lay them there, guess what? They're still going to be there next year, year after that, year after that, year after that. They're not going anywhere. Could they get down an inch in the ground? It's possible, but it's unlikely that phosphorus is going to get that deep. And seriously, I'm dead serious about this. It is unlikely if you lay phosphorus on the soil surface that it's going to get down even 1 inch deep in 4 years. It just doesn't move very well in soil. And zinc is about the same way. So because of that, we have to think about how do we place these? And if we're going to just lay them on the soil surface, we better have a plan in the not too distant future for how are we going to get them in the ground? Now, I don't worry, of course, about nitrogen, sulfur, boron, and there are a few others that are relatively mobile in soil and in some cases too mobile. So you can lay them on the soil surface. After you start getting rain, they're going to move down. Everything's fine. They'll be in the root zone. No big deal. But those immobile nutrients, those are the ones we have to be concerned about. The other thing that I'm thinking a lot about, obviously, is what compaction have I caused out there? Now, this fall, I'm not going to cause much compaction when there's no moisture in the soil. But in a normal year, or especially in a wet year like the last couple, we're probably out there fixing ruts. We're probably thinking about, all right, when do we want to time this tillage that we want to do? Because we don't want to do it too early. We don't want to do it when things are too wet. And then we really cause problems with compaction. So there's a fine line there. And also, when we talk about compaction, every once in a while I'll hear people discussing compaction, they'll say, yep, we're going to try to eliminate compaction. And I'm going, what are you talking about? There's no such thing as eliminating compaction. All we can do is reduce it. So we just want to be as smart as we can about reducing compaction out there. So a couple of the things that we would encourage you to do if you're doing tillage and you're worried about compaction, obviously, number one is don't work the ground when it's too wet. Well, obviously, through most of the region where we farm and the entire United States Midwest, a lot of southern Canada, it's pretty dry. So I'm not too worried about a lot of compaction being created this fall compared to normal. But what I am worried about is, what are we going to do to fix any spots of compaction we created the last couple of years? How are we going to make those things better? So we do talk about some of these vertical tillage tools. We do talk a lot about strip till. And by the way, one of the reasons why I like strip till is, however deep you're going with, whether it's a shank or a coulter, you have no compaction down to that point. None. Zero. Well, I shouldn't say zero. But, I mean, there's not enough compaction that it's going to cause any problems for your plant roots. So they're going to go to the bottom of however deep you ran your machine almost instantly next spring or whenever you seed your crop. So you got to think about that. The other thing that we've commonly done in the past is we've gone out there with deep shanks and we've gone clear as deep as 20 inches. A lot of times we prefer straight shanks, narrow points. It all depends on if you want to roll that ground or if you don't. So in a lot of cases, we don't because we only have a few inches of topsoil, the rest subsoil. I really don't want to bring the subsoil up to my topsoil. So that's why we're not stirring stuff like some people will do very often. I'm not saying we wouldn't ever do it, but most of the time we're not. So those are some of the things that we're looking at. And then finally, I'm thinking about what type of seed bed are we leaving for next spring, especially if this is going to be your last pass. If you aren't planning to till in the spring, you got to do a good job getting that seed bed all ready to go. So anyway, we'll continue talking about fall tillage considerations. We're also going to get to your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag a little bit later in the show. And again, if you've got a question for us, just email us radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned. We'll be talking fall tillage right after this.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
When it comes to effective herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. They've been bringing growers trusted brands like Burnmaster, Scorch, and Spitfire for decades, made right here in the USA. What's your favorite Nufarm brand? Email it to turnuptheburn@nufarm.com and you'll be entered to win a monthly $1,000 product giveaway. In these unprecedented times, you're facing unprecedented pressure. Nufarm's here to help.
Welcome back. This is Ag PhD Radio. I'm Brian Hefty. Today we're talking about fall tillage considerations. If you've got any questions for us, our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. Or email us radio at agphd.com. All right, so first on the show, we've got Ty Fickenscher with us. He is with Luma, and we're going to talk a little about Soil Warrior, especially with strip till. Ty, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you, Brian?
Great. Okay, so in my area, and I believe in your area in Nebraska as well, it's dry this fall. Are you concerned that guys are going to be able to get their strip till machines even into the ground, or how dry is it out there?
Yeah, it's in our two counties here in central Nebraska, we're probably one of the driest in the state besides the western part of the state and closer to Omaha. But yeah, definitely, even this summer during irrigation, you know, put a inch of water on, come back 2 days later, the soil is still just rock hard from you know, how dry it was. I mean, nothing loosens the soil better than a good rain from Mother Nature. And, so as we look here at this fall, you know, just making sure we can get the tillage, the deep tillage we want, you know, to kind of break that soil up is going to be critical, but challenging all the same.
Okay, so as you say that, are you expecting you're going to have a lot of people this fall, you're going to say, you know what, why don't you just wait until after your first rain and then do your strip till? Are you going to advise guys to go to spring? I mean, what's your thought at this point? And I realize you can't predict the weather, nor can I, but just right. what's your thought in general as you're talking to people about strip till?
Well, and I think you're right on with getting some moisture, getting a rain on it, you know, help loosen that soil up a little bit more before we get out there. I mean, that's the thing is when we've experienced 3 months of near no moisture, you know, even the subsoil is just completely tapped out. So even deeper down the profile, we don't have the moisture. So if we can get, you know, 2, 3, 4 inches over a number of days to kind of help get that soaked up, loosen that soil up would be ideal. You know, I don't know if necessarily waiting until spring would be the right answer. You're just pushing that, kind of kicking the can down the road, if you will. But if we can get some of the tillage done in the fall, if the field conditions allow, that would be the best case scenario.
Yeah, like I was saying earlier in the show, we've probably got 2, maybe 3 weeks of harvest left, hopefully just 2. But, I mean, we've got a little bit of time for us until we want to start doing some of these jobs, and I'm hoping we get a little bit of rain. But I got to be honest, I don't recall it ever, and I've been an agronomist for 30 years now, and I've been on our farm for my entire life, and I'm over 50. I don't remember it being this dry late in September before, for us anyway. I mean, even in 2012, we had plenty of rain in August. 2013, we were cooler and we had rain at the right time. I mean, some of these super bad drought years, we still have been able to go out there and do a nice job with fall tillage. But yeah, I'm just a little bit worried about it right now. Any other thoughts with that, Ty?
No, I mean, that's the thing. You look at, we're, you know, again, in this area, we're looking at the driest year in 128 or 29 years, and just making sure you do a good job. I mean, that's the number one thing. We don't want to get out there and make a mess. It has to be corrected somehow next year. And also tear equipment apart. You know, want to make sure you're doing a good job on both fronts. So,
okay, next thing is, I am surprised at how many people strip till without putting fertilizer on, and I'm just going, what? Why would you even do that? I don't understand that. You've got a great opportunity to put some fertilizer on. You don't have to put on everything if you don't want to, but I'm a big believer in putting fertilizer down into the ground a little bit, especially these immobile nutrients like phosphorus, zinc. I mean, there are a few different ones that they're just not going to get down in the ground unless you do some form of tillage. And the thing I've liked most about strip till is it's kind of like no till, other than I have a narrow band that I have done tillage with. So with that fertilizer placement, I mean, like, of the farmers you're working with, are most of them now putting fertilizer on, or do you still have a bunch of guys as well that aren't putting the fertilizer out?
No, all the ones that we work with, especially with the Soil Warrior brand, they're putting some form of fertilizer down. You know, usually phosphorus in the fall, in the fall. Nitrogen, sulfur in the spring.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm right on board with you. I see some strips being put down, no fertilizer, and you know, then come back and broadcast fertilizer, and just it doesn't really compute. I guess it'd be good to get that into the soil where the roots will get it.
Right. And so that's the one big thing I wanted to stress to all of our listeners. If you are thinking about strip till or any type of deep placement, put phosphorus out, phosphorus, zinc, copper, even to some degree potassium, they don't move well in soil. So if you can get them down there, you're just going to get better efficiency out of that fertilizer. And the other thing is you have a lot less risk for loss. About the only way you're going to lose phosphorus ever is if you have soil erosion. Well, if you put your phosphorus down below the top couple inches, you don't have that worry anymore. When I look at a lot of these soil tests, and we do 1-inch soil tests or 2-inch soil tests, and go down, you know, every inch or every 2 inches, whatever, there's so much stratification of nutrients, and the strip till really can help fix that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's the thing. When you look at those big heavy rains come after broadcast, you know, a lot of that fertilizer is not staying where it was placed. But if you get it down in that root zone, down in the soil, you're exactly right. You're not going to see that movement like you would otherwise.
All right. Anything else in terms of fertilizer, any other tips that you might have for farmers out there who are putting fertilizer on, let's say maybe for the first time with a strip-till machine?
Yeah, I think just look at the forms. Just be aware of which nutrients are being put out and if it's mobile or immobile. Obviously, in the fall, just like you said, Brian, you want to look at the immobile nutrients in the fall so you have less of a chance of those leaching out, running off, or whatever the case may be. So that's really probably the biggest tip we have is just kind of pay attention to what's going into the soil and the timing of that application as well.
All right. My other big question for you is, what do you think of the berm that the strip-till machine is going to leave behind? I like having a fairly decent berm. I mean, it doesn't have to be hilled up a tremendous amount, but I want at least some berm so then it can settle down a little bit. And I just definitely don't want to have an indention in the ground that we're trying to plant into in the spring. So talk to us just a little bit about what type of berm you feel like a guy should leave behind a strip-till machine.
Yeah, that's an important piece too. Just like you said, as we get into the winter, that snow is going to take and press that soil back down. So we might come in with just a slight berm or even level on that strip in the spring to plant into. But the bigger berm we put in the fall, and even if it's somewhat cloddy, we've had it where we've raised up our rolling baskets in the fall. And even if somewhat cloddy through the winter months, we get those snows on and we'll get some freeze and thaw action. Those clods tend to break down very well. And even in the fall, if we've had some clods, the guys come back and plant in the spring, and they say they just blew apart when the plants are hitting them. So if we can kind of get that soil up as much as possible, just allow Mother Nature to do its thing through the winter months, it seems to be the ideal situation.
All right, Ty, you got any last words for us today in terms of just strip-till in the fall and doing a good job with that machine?
Well, you're doing a good job is the main thing. I say I don't want to make a mess for the next year, but you know we've had two springs in a row now where there's been very little time to get a good job done. So if we can do as much as we can in the fall, fortunately Mother Nature is a little forgiving, you know, allowing those winter months to help us out a little bit. So the more we can get done in the fall, the better off we'll be in preparing for spring and getting in planting in good time.
All right, again, we've been talking to Ty Fickenscher. He's with LUMA. We've been talking about Soil Warrior and especially strip-till. Ty, thanks a lot for the time today. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you, Brian.
You bet. Yeah, we've been doing strip-till. Well, I'll just take you back a little bit. We started doing a lot of no-till stuff 25 years ago, and we did that for about 10 years on roughly half the farm. Had a lot of issues with the ground. Was just really cold for us in the spring because we farm so far north, and we just didn't get good stands. And then the other problem was nutrient stratification. We didn't have a way to get nutrients down into the soil. And I'm not saying no-till's bad. I'm not saying people shouldn't no-till. But for us, we were having a lot of problems and couldn't figure out how to deal with it. And so that's why we switched roughly half our acres to strip-till about 15, 16, 17 years ago, something like that. And I'm just so happy that we did. It's made a lot of difference on our farm. We're getting nutrients down a little deeper. The probably the biggest disadvantage, I would say, is it does take some time in the fall, and you got to have at least a halfway decent operator because, like for us, we're going out there in 30-inch rows, and those are the rows we're going to plant into in the spring. But if you do a good job in the fall, you're set. I mean, there's no more tillage. You just go out there, plant right into it in the spring. It's worked really well. Like I was saying earlier, basically no compaction down to the however deep you've run that machine. So it's been pretty awesome for us. Well, we'll keep talking more about fall tillage right after this.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
I'll take predictability where I can get it.
With their CropWise Seed Selector, NK Seeds combines local knowledge and local data to show me where their seed fits.
And even where it doesn't. Because out here, predictability is hard to come by. And success matters. Find your seed at nkseeds.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
As a little girl, I always wanted to run the combine because it meant I was helping Dad. And Dad always said, farmers are helpers. I'm teaching that to my daughters, that farmers help our family, our neighbors, and our community. It's what I do at work. I help farmers get the equipment they need. My name is Kim. I'm a farmer, and I work for Case IH.
Case IH, built by farmers.
Downtime during spraying can lead to huge yield losses. Keep rolling with the Pentair Hypro Force Field. This pump features a unique self-regulated chamber that allows the pump to run dry while eliminating cracked seals, so you can spray longer and more reliably. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Make every bushel count with the End Zone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shatter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. Condition your grain for ideal moisture with the End Zone. Visit farmshopmfg.com for more.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty. We're talking a little about fall tillage, and next on the show we've got Chris Lerson with us. He is with Case IH. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Brian. How are you?
Excellent. So in our last segment, we were talking a little about how dry it is, and certainly it's not super dry everywhere. But since it's really dry in my farm, I want to talk just a little about that to start with. What do you suggest for guys that say, well, like me, I don't recall it ever on our farm, even in the drought years, being as dry as it is right now in late September. And hopefully we get an inch of rain and everything clears up. That's all we would need. But right now, when it's bone dry like that, what do you suggest for tillage? We've got corn stalks, for example, that we want to go corn to again next year. We'd like to do some tillage, but should I wait for a rain, or what do you suggest I should do for tillage?
Well, I think it all starts with kind of evaluating what you actually have. I think going out in the field with a spade and digging a hole and starting to kind of evaluate what you actually have before we make any rash decisions.
Yep.
On what we're going to do is really critical. And I like doing that a lot with just a spade, a pocket knife, and just a measuring stick to find out, some of the things like compaction. Do we have that? And if we do, by using that pocket knife and driving into the side of that hole that we've dug, 12 to 15 inches below in the ground and pulling up, and you'll eventually find out if you have compaction or not by if that knife has a little bit of resistance to it somewhere in that probably 8, 9, 10 inches deep. And if you do, then it's probably still a situation where you want to do a little bit of primary tillage to be able to get that compaction broke up. So when you do get the rain, and I assume probably some snow around your farm, it can infiltrate in later on.
How about when we're out doing tillage and it's really dry, we seem to go through parts faster, things wear faster. Can you talk to us about anything that you're doing at Case IH to hopefully reduce that issue for us?
Well, we try to talk a lot about settings and making sure, A, we have the machine kind of set the way we intended it to be set. And, you know, especially for like the primary tillage tools, we try to get 1 inch under the compaction layer because our points and components that engage the ground are designed with like chromium carbide caps to be able to engage that compaction layer. The result, if you don't set it correctly and you go to 15, 16 inches deep as opposed to 10 or 11, you end up wearing other components of the machine out, like the shank, or especially in these dry conditions, like you mentioned, it just makes it harder. And, you know, if we're running discs and the like, you know, we try to set for that quarter inch of the radius of the blade. You know, you have a 24-inch blade, you know, you're probably looking at 3 to 4 inches deep and no deeper. That gives you the best, most efficient area to run the machine and reduces our wear as much as possible.
How about just the type of material that gets used for shanks and coulters and that kind of thing? Is there anything we should be looking for?
Well, you know, the like, for example, blades, and I think you guys have had some experience with the Earth Metal product. That's really the product that we use to make our blades out of and sweeps and such, that, you know, is really a pure virgin material that has no recycled product in it that really allows that product to be durable as well as also you know, extremely wear resistant.
Well, that's kind of why I ask, because we have been really dry here lately and we have seen some difference there. I mean, a fair amount of difference, and the Earth Metal has worked out pretty well. So, you know, the last couple of years, it wasn't as big a deal when we had all kinds of moisture out there, but we just don't have that. And in these drier areas, that the wear on equipment is a really big deal. And a lot of people obviously are concerned about that. We, as farmers, it's not like we're getting rich right now. We're trying to cut down on our expenses as much as we can. And, you know, one of the things that our dad always talked to us about is, he's like, look, guys, it's okay if you spend a little bit more money up front if whatever you're spending that on lasts much longer than the cheap option. So he was real big on making sure he thoroughly vetted everything out, because he's like, so often you get sold these cheap things. Well, that's, I mean, you only get what you paid for in a lot of cases. So we've been happy with the Earth Metal thing, and that's why I was just curious on your comments with that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think we've all probably been burnt once or twice by going the cheap route, and it ends up not necessarily paying off in the end.
All right, so what else are you getting for questions right now from farmers and agronomists out there?
Well, I think, like you mentioned, that the dryness has been a concern. You know, for some of our listeners, we've had, you know, in central Iowa had some wind issues, as we know from the storm that came through.
What? No, I hadn't heard anything about that, Chris. it was terrible for those guys. Yeah. Just like, I mean, that's basically what happened in South Dakota too last year. So, I mean, yeah, it's, we really feel for those guys. But anyway, go ahead. What do you suggest in those cases?
Yeah, so we've seen a lot of success. You know, obviously this is, we're just kind of, seems like they're getting into the position of what's happening insurance wise and such, and either, you know, unfortunately that taking the proposition of plowing under a crop is no fun whatsoever, and I feel terrible for that having to happen. But I've had, you know, obviously some solutions that we've had to come up with and provide to local farmers in that area to make that happen. And obviously, the disc harrows and the new speed tiller, high speed disc, has been something that people have begun to adopt and utilize to move that crop into the ground and hopefully get it to germinate. And so we don't have to deal with the volunteer so much next spring. And it's certainly an option there in that situation.
Yep. Yeah, last year on our farm, I'll throw another thing out to you. So last year was terrible in South Dakota because we had that almost same wind in South Dakota. So we had to deal with that, number one. And number two, in the fall, we had record flooding. And so we had already had record rainfall for the year. And then we had record fall rain. And so the river came out of its banks for only the second time ever in the fall by us. And it wiped out about, I'm trying to think what we lost. We lost 150 acres of our soybeans that were within 2 weeks of harvest. Mm-hmm. And lost them all. So let's say that I have flooding like that. What do you suggest if it is corn or bean crop that it's all junk now, but all the stuff is still standing there and standing tall? What do you do in that case?
Yeah, so I think a very good question. And again, that's going to be kind of what you're looking for next spring and what you believe you're going to be planting from your intentions. Which, of course, is probably a bit of a wild card right now.
Well, let me start with this, though, Chris. I think the most important thing is that's river bottom ground that got flooded out. So most everybody's going to say, I want that ground black so it gets the opportunity to dry out for spring. So I should have thrown that caveat in for you. So what do you suggest?
Sure. Well, in that case, I think it's still going to be some sort of primary tillage, combination tillage pass there to be able to turn it black. Make sure the compaction is removed, and it'll give you the best opportunity really to bury what is there, and you know, with the hopes probably maybe a little bit of germination out of it to help it grow, and then it freezes off, and you don't have to worry so much about the volunteer next year in that situation. But certainly for others in that type of situation where you're still looking to turn it black, and you know, maybe for a crop that. You know, looking for maybe soybeans next year. The need for compaction removal may not be as great, so you're looking at probably a test
But
task.
Here's the other thing we ran into, Chris, and I know guys are going to be going through this in Iowa as well. You got all that stuff laying there, and it's fine to talk about tillage, but we got to chop that up to some degree. So, I mean, can we chop it up good enough in one pass and till it in, or do you think we're going to need two passes? Because that's, I think, you know, one of our big questions last year, and I know guys are going through that this year.
Yeah, well, it's amazing what tools can do today, and certainly are heavy and have the ability to cut through. Chopping it certainly is that one option, and again, it's going to be. You know, by the field, you know, and determining what we need to do and when, by just the evaluation, is a chance for two passes. Probably, we certainly like to see just one because of the efficiencies. But it's really hard to determine.
I know, and it's a little bit of an individual thing, and it's a tough deal. Again, we've been talking to Chris Larson with Case IH. Chris, thanks for the time. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your land is a legacy. A challenge from those who tended it before you to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Asgrow brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Asgrow leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shutter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. With the Endzone, you can combine higher moisture beans earlier in the season to reduce field loss, then use your bin fans to naturally reach your target moisture. Condition your grain for maximum profit with the Endzone. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from Sipcam Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
Have resistant weeds invaded your cornfields? Tough 5EC, manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, can help. When added to the post-emergence tank mix, Tough 5EC synergizes the effectiveness of HPPD inhibitors on key broadleaf weeds. In fact, university field trials have shown 5 to 30% increased control of herbicide-resistant Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Now that's tough on weeds. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
What's the next big thing from the Roundup Ready Extend crop system? A soybean built on Roundup Ready to Extend technology, or one with glufosinate tolerance? Great news, it's both. Expected soon. Extend Flex Soybeans. Always read and follow IRM where applicable. Grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Commercial availability in 2021 is dependent on regulatory approval. No dicamba may be used in crop with Extend Flex Soybeans unless and until approved. And no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. We've been talking about fall tillage today, and Chris Larson brought up something in our last segment there about the derecho, the high winds that went through Iowa, and there are going to be some people that unfortunately have to just till that crop under. We dealt with that last year on our farm. I mean, there were a lot of guys that dealt with it with the wind, but we dealt with it with flooding, and we had full crop. Full standing big crop, and it was junk because the flood came through 2 weeks before we were going to harvest. And I mentioned right at the end there the chopping it up part. That was really our number one concern. So we had some where we actually ran the combine through it, just threw it all on the ground. We had other stuff where we ran a couple of tillage passes. But if you're dealing with that unfortunate situation, I guess my number one suggestion is try to chop things up as best you can, because it's just like the chopping corn head versus a non-chopping corn head. The smaller you get those pieces, the faster they're going to break down, and the quicker you're going to get the nutrients back for your next crop, plus the easier it's going to be to plant and hopefully get a great stand next year. So anyway, just one of the things that you got to think about, a lot of different ways to do it, but don't forget about chopping that stuff up. If you've got great big pieces of residue in the soil that haven't been chopped up at all, it's going to take a long time for them to break down. All right, we're going to jump to the phone lines again. We got Dell calling in from Michigan. Dell, how you doing today?
I'm doing fine. My question about fall tillage is on this heavy tillage.
Yep.
Sometimes they take an angle across the field.
Yep.
Not the row angle, but an angle.
Yep.
How do you determine the angle, and how does the angle affect your crop in the chopping up? And thank you, and I love your show.
Awesome. Thanks, Dell. All right, so I would just say, first of all, what angle do you run with? Everybody does something different. So I don't think there's any one set thing out there. I will say it has been nice having GPS. And I can just remember one of the last jobs that our dad did for us on our farm. And this was, he passed away last year, but this was probably 10 years ago. And anyway, he wanted to do some chisel plowing for us. And I said, sure. But my problem was it was right by the highway. So everybody could see it. And anyway, my dad, he would brag all the time about how straight he could drive his rows. Even when he was a kid, he said his dad had him start planting when he was, I don't know, you never know which story you're going to come up with, but 7 years old or 10 years old, I don't even remember. But because my dad could drive so straight, he's the one that drove the planter. So anyway, he said, yep, I want to do some chisel plowing for you one day. He had some time one afternoon. I'm like, great, we need the help. And so anyway, I said, hey, would you like to take my son along with you? He was whatever, you know, 8, 9 years old, something like that. And so I figured, oh, I better call him after a while, after my dad had been out there with my son, because I figured he'd be talking his ear off or whatever. But anyway, so I call him up and I go, hey, how's that GPS running? How's the auto steer working in there? And he goes, I don't even know how to turn it on. I said, I'll have somebody come down and turn it on for you. So it's easier and you can spend more time talking to Zach. So anyway, that was about halfway through the field. The rest of the half of the field, it was like perfectly straight. And this was not even RTK GPS. And so I think my dad had to see that all winter long, and we had kind of an open winter. So you could see exactly where my dad had gone versus where the tractor took over. And that was the last thing that he ever did, because I think at that point he realized, yep, I can't drive super straight anymore. But anyway, where I'm going with all this is he was going at an angle, and it's nice when you don't have rows to follow when you have that GPS and auto steer. But yeah, there's no set thing. The reason why, obviously, people have gone at an angle is to stir things up a little bit, and that's all fine. But the problem with that is then you have ridges that you've now created for planting in the spring. So if you're going to till at an angle, then what we most of the time suggest is that you do another tillage pass that's going to go with your rows, and that will usually give you a more even and more consistent stand in the spring. And that's one of the things we learned from Francis Childs. He was the world record corn producer in the United States probably 20 years ago. He was the first guy raising 400 bushel corn. And he's like, look, guys, you got to till with the rows, at least for your last pass. So things are straight. You're not going over these ridges. And are things helped today with precision planting and all these fancy planters that we have? Sure, it's helped. But you got to give your planter the best possible chance to succeed. So I would just say, you know, we used to do almost everything at an angle as well, and we've now switched, and we're doing a lot of stuff with the row. So I'm not saying everything has to be with the row, but we do like a lot of the stuff with the row, so we get a better stand in the spring, because a better stand is usually one of the key things that leads to better yields. All right, with that, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag. All right, I have a ton of questions. Let's start with this one. This is from Justin in Montana. He says, hi guys, I'd like to get your opinion on my soil sample. I own the ground. It's under pivot. It has a sandy streak through it. I'm growing sugar beets on the field next year, and I'd like to hit 32 tons. And by the way, I had soybeans on it this year, and I mainly grow sugar beets, spring wheat, and soybeans. Okay, so Justin, first of all, I'm looking at one soil test, and you just told me you've got ground that has a sandy streak through it. So, I assume this is not the sandy streak when the CEC is 30, so that's really heavy ground. But that's absolutely why we want to do zone testing or grid testing, so we can find out what's going on in different areas of the field. So, I'd put it to you this way. Even if it's one time in your life, just do some 1-acre grids, and you're going to go, Brian, that's nuts, and we're in Montana and everything else. Just take an area even then of the field, and let's do 1-acre grids and find out what we have there and what kind of consistency we have with things, because there are some things that need to get fixed. So, for example, you've got 3.8% sodium here. 3.8%! That's well on the way to being dead soil. And I mean well on the way to being dead soil. So when I see 3.8, that throws up an enormous red flag. That's the first thing that I'm going to be working on. So, I mean, I assumed something was wrong when I saw 8.1 and 8.2 pH. And in your area, there is a lot of high sodium. And I'm just trying to tell you that is terrible for the soil when that sodium gets above 1%. So what I'm looking at, number one, when you said irrigated, I'm going to look at the water quality. How's my water quality? Do I need to do something there? Number two, I'm going to look at drainage. And I know this seems insane to say, oh, it's in Montana and I need to put tile in. Yep, you probably do. If you had tile in that field, that sodium, you could turn that into a salt with sulfur. You've got lots of sulfur in your soil. That's another thing that indicates to me that you got poor drainage out there. The sulfate will bind with the sodium to form sodium sulfate. That's a salt that will leach out. So those are the things I'm looking at there. On top of that, I would just tell you, you're only at 2.6% base saturation potassium, which sounds good in some cases, especially when I tell you 304 parts per million. And even on your lab results, they say, oh, it's high. Nope, that's not high. You got to look at base saturation K, and it needs to be 4 to 8%. You got to get that potassium up over time. That's absolutely going to help you, especially with your soybean crop, but it'll help you with all your crops that you're raising. And the other thing is, when you own the ground in heavy soil, you're never going to lose that potassium. You're going to put it out there. You're never going to lose it. Your crop's going to use it at some point. So those are the first few things that I would fix. Beyond that, I mean, we can look at little things like, would I throw a little more manganese out there, a little more zinc, a little more copper? Absolutely, I would. And certainly you need more phosphorus. And here's another thing, and I feel bad for you, because sometimes as farmers, we get very misled. On his soil test here, it says he is high for phosphorus. His Olson test, that's available phosphorus, is 14 parts per million. 14, and they're calling it high? Not only am I going to call that low, I'm going to call that deficient. That is not good. So, like I say, I feel bad for you that they're even calling that high, that nobody in their right mind has, I mean, any idea what they're doing if they're calling 14 parts per million high on phosphorus for the crop that you're talking about. So, yes, if I wanted to raise 12 bushel soybeans, 14 parts per million of phosphorus would be high, but not with the kind of yield goals I know you're looking at on irrigation. So, anyway, those are my suggestions there. All right, we're going to get to more of your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
Hey, Adam. New drone?
Not just any drone.
I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree. In the power lines!
Oh, it's in for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
We are right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag. If you've got a question for us, just email us radio@agphd.com. All right, this one comes from Morgan. Morgan says, you guys were talking about musk thistle a while back. Save money, save pollinators, use mechanical control, pop and bag seed heads, and rip out the plant and leave to compost. Morgan, if farmers would, or ranchers would like to take your advice, that would be great. I unfortunately don't think you're going to find a lot of farmers who are willing to spend, it's probably 10 times the amount of money to go that way. Labor costs so much money anymore, and that's really the number one problem. Plus the fact that we didn't solve anything there. With musk thistle and with a lot of these weeds out there, there are a lot of seeds that are in the ground and new plants that are getting started. And like with musk thistle, for example, it's a biennial. And so year one, there are no seed heads to pop. How are you going to get it under control? Even mechanical control usually will not do it. So then you got to fight it again the next year. And by the way, mechanical control means more erosion. And soil erosion was the number one issue in agriculture back in the 30s that led to what they call the dirty 30s and some of the depression era issues that we had. So we're not going back to mechanical control, and you're quite frankly not going to do it out in a pasture. All right, next one here is from Tanner. He says, I'm familiar with ag chemicals, but I'd like to know more about modes of action, why some chemicals work and which ones are similar. So Tanner, we have a mode of action app. If you go to AgPhD apps, like for your smartphone or your tablet, you can download the AgPhD mode of action app, and then at least you can see which herbicides are in each group, like the group 15s, for example. So in terms of how the products work, I mean, you can read up on these things. It's just, it's complicated and it changes a little bit every year. And so I'd put it this way. If you've got specific questions, just send those to us. We answer those every day here on the show. Next one is from Don. He says, I'm looking for more information concerning the use of foliar feeding sprays on soybeans. It seems that everyone I talk to has a different opinion. And I was just wondering what episodes you guys have talking about these things. Don, we do have a number of things out there. So if you just do an internet search on foliar feeding soybeans and Ag PhD, there will be some things that come up. But yes, I would just tell you there are a lot of opinions on that. The first thing that I'm usually looking at, or first two things, is your soil test and your tissue test. Oh, and I'd kind of like to know what you applied for fertilizer as well. But here's where I'm going with this. If let's say I'm short on boron in my soil, I'm short on boron in the tissue test, then the odds are much greater that some boron applied foliar to a crop like soybeans or any crop, quite frankly, the odds are much greater that that's going to pay. But yeah, we've had a real challenge making foliar sprays pay. Now, one of the things that some of the high-yield guys have talked to us about, and so we've started doing at our farm, is using a little fulvic acid. You throw some fulvic acid together with some foliar fertilizer, and that seems to help the intake. Also, when you have super dry conditions like we dealt with late summer here, it's hard to get almost anything into that plant. The plant is closing up more. It's a real challenge. So you got to have at least some moisture. You will have better response if it's a nutrient that your crop is looking like at some point it's going to be short on, or is short on today. And then beyond that, try to get it into the plant with something like fulvic acid. I would say too, phosphorus doesn't go into plant leaves very well, but there are certainly other nutrients like nitrogen, sulfur, boron that do. All right, next one here. It's from Mac, who says, what soil sampling app do you use? We actually have an Ag PhD soils app, and that is what we use. And it's really nice because then you can go out there, set up your grids or zones, whatever you want to do, and then it'll tell you right in the field where to be. It's really, really nice and helpful. We're using that on our farm. Even today as we speak, we're pulling some 1-acre grids. Next one is from Masood. He asks about elemental sulfur. If I'm going to use elemental sulfur to adjust high pH ground, should I use the 80% or the 90%? Honestly, the biggest things you're looking for, it's not whether it's 80 or 90%. What you're looking for is, number one, what's the cost? We can't spend a fortune. Number two, or actually I should probably rephrase this. Number one is it's got to be a very, very fine material. So it's got to break down quickly in water. Now, if you don't have any water, it's not going to break down, of course. But what happens is bacteria will take this elemental sulfur and they will convert it. This is part of the conversion process. It will convert over to sulfate. In that, then you end up with sulfuric acid when it converts from sulfur to sulfate. And the sulfuric acid is what will lower your pH. Okay, now on top of that, and it's not just buying the elemental sulfur, it's also, you've got to have good drainage. If you do not have good drainage, if this is poorly drained, then you will have an issue and it might not turn to hydrogen sulfate or sulfuric acid at all. It might turn to hydrogen sulfide. Your soil will smell like rotten eggs. That's bad. You don't want that. So just make sure you have good drainage out there before you're using a bunch of elemental sulfur. All right, Charlie asks, what product are you promoting to break down crop residue in the fall and what's the cost per acre? We have been talking about, and I assume he's talking about a biological. We've been talking about decomp. That's roughly $5 to $7 an acre. I think it's 70 different microbes that are in there. We've been using that with some decent success. The other things that you're looking for in terms of breakdown, good levels of nitrogen and to some degree sulfur as well. So if your crop was nitrogen starved, then that means that your carbon and nitrogen ratio is going to be even higher than normal and certainly higher than it should be. So what you can do is you could spray some liquid 28% out there along with some sulfur, and that will help break that down faster as well. So I would certainly look at decomp, I'd look at liquid nitrogen, and I look at least a little bit of sulfur. Now, if you want to, I mean, you can certainly do tillage, and tillage is going to break residue down a lot faster as well. That gets, when you start getting dirt mixed in with all your residue, then you've got a bunch of the soil microbes, the natural soil microbes, and they are going to help break things down faster as well. So tillage can help, but if you're trying to avoid tillage, then yeah, we're usually talking about decomp, nitrogen, and a little bit of sulfur. Let's see. Next one here is from Jim. He says, hi, guys. I was watching your TV show recently, and you were talking about a special custom-built small combine harvester for your research plots for Ag PhD. Can you share with me what manufacturer offers a small combine? Okay, so, Jim, there are some companies out there. We've used a Kincaid before. There's a Wintersteiger, but what we're using now, quite frankly, is just an older Case IH, and I'm trying to think of which combine we kept for that. But anyway, it's more of a, not a research combine, a commercial combine, because we just have gone, we have some real little plots, and that's where the Kincaid was nice, and we're doing a ton of that research kind of stuff, but we're doing a lot more things that are bigger scale. And so just to have a, let's say a 20-foot soybean head as opposed to a 40-foot head, and have a, what we're using is a four-row Capello chopping head. They had to build that for us. We like the chopping. We talk about that quite often. We like the chopping head. But to do four-row, that's not super common. But, you know, for our research plots, it's really nice. Oh, and by the way, if for anybody out there, if you're doing research plots, this is one of the things we talk about with corn all the time. If you have corns side by side, the tall corn always wins. So what we'll try to do is, let's say we put in 12 rows, we're going to harvest out the middle four rows, leaving four rows on each side. At a minimum, you got to leave at least two rows on each side. And then that generally takes away that shading effect that you will get from the tall corn that's next to it, or the short corn, and then this variety would have an advantage. So you got to try to take those factors out, because otherwise the tall corn's always going to win. And as you know, there are many disadvantages to having tall corn out in a field. All right, next one is from Mark in Nebraska. He says, I've got a question on your thoughts on dry fertilizer products that have nitrogen, phosphorus, sulfur, and zinc all in one prill. Do you like the recoverability of that, or do you like to separate the phosphorus, sulfur, and zinc? Look, Mark, I have absolutely no problem if you've got a prill that has everything together. And I mean, that's great, in fact, because then you know that every plant root has that chance to get all those nutrients and get the right, hopefully, balance that you've got out there. So, no, I have absolutely no problem with that, other than I will say this. If your ground is already loaded up on phosphorus, but it needs sulfur and zinc, well, now that's where you've got to split it. So having it all in one prill is fine if you need all those nutrients. If you don't, then you got to split it up. All right, well, we hope you've enjoyed our show today. We really appreciate you listening. And I guess before we go, I just want to say thanks to our production staff. My sister Janelle was running the controls. Great job today again. Thanks to everybody who called or wrote in with questions. Appreciate that. And thanks to you for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.